part of the conversation. Send us a WhatsApp message on +27 73 470 3520 or call us at +27 12 001 7679. Let your voice be heard. Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media. From broadcast to baptism.
Well, good evening to you once again, and welcome to the Tuesday edition of Business Sense right here on Adventist World Radio. As you know, we are powered by SID Media. It is a Tuesday, the 3rd of December, 2024. We are beginning almost to the tail end of this particular year. A couple of weeks from now, we'll be saying goodbye to 2024. And what a way for us to actually end it for today. We're talking about, well, is big data really changing decision-making processes? As we prepare, of course, for 2025 as well, in the era of digital transformation, organizations realize the value and the importance of making the right decisions at the right time, which can only be made through relying on the relevant and timely and timeously available data. And of course, information that can then be processed as part of the decision-making process. And as someone who sits in boards as well, I know for a fact that, yeah, we make decisions based on data as well. And I work with quite a lot of entrepreneurs in this space. And I can tell you, data is very, very important. And the amount of data created, stored, and then used by organizations is, in fact, staggering and growing at almost double the value every 2 years, we are told. The most recent estimates of usable data reached 130 zettabytes. I've never heard of this, but the zettabytes by 2023. And who else to have this conversation than big data coach Timothy Oriedo, joining us this evening once again to speak to us about how big data influences decision-making, especially in terms of organizations and their processes. And very importantly then, what is the impact, particularly if you have a business and listening to us right now and is joining us this evening. My elder, good evening. And once again, welcome to the show.
Good evening, Sapelo. Thank you for having me.
I appreciate your time as well. And how are you finding the balance of the year?
The year's run really rushed past. I can't believe we are just on the first day of the last month of the year.
Yeah,
but it's been a fulfilling year.
Yeah.
And we are looking hopeful to pick the momentum into the coming year.
Into the coming year, right? I know you're someone who traveled quite extensively, mm-hmm. but are you taking some time out traveling, going somewhere with the family?
Yes, definitely. So I just have my final engagement for the year in Zambia from tomorrow. And from the week of 10th, I will be just taking a break now. Spend time with family.
To recoup as well from the 10th. Yeah, so early. Some of us would still be working and you are going away. I suppose that's the beauty of being an entrepreneur, mm-hmm. right? You can determine when you want to go away.
Yeah. It's a good work life balance.
Yeah,
you're able to manage when the pressure takes a toll on you.
Yes.
You're able to create those balances, which is quite important. So you just to sit, reflect, and also reinvent yourself.
That's amazing. Yesterday it was a Monday, so we were talking to one of our entrepreneurs and leaders in this space, and he spoke about the importance of reflecting. Mondays we reflect on personal finance, and Tuesday you mentioned reflecting as well, and it's such an important thing to actually come out. Even from a technological point of view, are you saying we need to sit back and reflect as well?
Especially looking at the pace of change that most technological infrastructure sits on. It's important that we carry those reflections, looking into the future, and not getting satisfied with what's at the present, because it's a very dynamic environment, and so many pulling forces in different directions. When you're in the day-to-day running and get distractions from meeting the daily demands of businesses, you may rarely have time to sit and reflect what direction your business is taking. And perhaps that reflection gives you a moment to be able to look into the future and create a path for reinvention and also meeting future expectations
future
and just anticipating
expectations.
the risks that are coming and preparing to them in advance.
Sure. That's amazing. Now, before we go somewhere, we know you, a good friend of this show, but for people who may not know you, what do you do and what does your business do as well?
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Sapelo. So I'm Timothy Oriedo. I'm a certified data scientist as well as a certified business coach. So I hold two coaching certifications from the International Coaching Federation and the World Association of Business Coaches. I spend my time running an organization called Predictive Analytics Lab that has got a Pan-African footprint. So we serve clients across the wider region of Africa. With the three key areas of our deliverables in helping organizations drive data-driven decisions through softwares, training, consulting, strategy consulting. Yeah.
That's amazing.
So that's what I do. I also serve as an adjunct business coach with a leading business school called the Strathmore Business School.
Beautiful, beautiful. And then once again, we thank you for your time. Now, let's start then by just getting everyone onto the same boat, right? And to say, let's then define big data before we even talk about how it is impacting and perhaps changing how people make decisions, particularly from a processes point of view. But what are we talking about when you say big data?
Yeah. All right. So when you talk about the word big data, just from the word itself, big and then data. So big connotes the volume. And then data is a Latin word that comes from the word datum, which means pieces of information that are stored. Yeah. So if you look at that, then in the world of digital, this is information that is collected. And processed and then stored in various digital formats. And so some of this information would be in different formats, which will include word, text, numerics, voice, images, videos. So when we put the two words together, big and then data, it brings up a new a phenomena that has been able to revolutionize the decision-making framework because we're referencing to pieces, volumes of data which are stored.
Yeah.
And there's something we call the four Vs. So the four Vs denote the principles of big data. So for some piece of information to qualify as big data, it has to be huge volume.
Yeah.
So we're talking about terabytes.
Yeah.
We're also talking about velocity, which is the second V.
Yeah.
So velocity means that information is coming in quick.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that means it's information that's being streamed or transmitted through digital infrastructure. And then we have a third V, which is variety. Yeah. So variety means various types of data. So I'd mentioned about voice, video, images, and text. That's the the type of data. And then the fourth V is veracity. Yeah, so veracity means this information is not clean. It comes in desperate sources, sits in desperate sources. So there will be an element that will involve the cleaning of that data to be able to make sense out of it. So in principle, now big data is the science or the discipline of analyzing information that meets those four principles.
Okay. And those four principles in the world of academics, I suppose, they talk about quantitative and qualitative data. How do these two then meet with the four Vs that you've just mentioned, just as an FYI?
So if you look at quantitative data, so this will be data that is numerical in nature. So you can be able to quantify. For example, if you're a business owner that owns a shop and you want to quantify your data, you know the stock levels.
Yes.
If you have employed people and you run on a payroll, you're able to know the salary. If you're doing sales, again, you're able to quantify the amount of sales. So anything that can be quantified, now that's quantified data. So in this other side of technology, we call that structured data.
Okay.
Yeah. And the other spectrum, qualitative information is information that you cannot perceive the value by first instincts.
Mm-hmm.
So for example, you may need to run interviews or you may need to ask questions before you relate that data.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So things like questionnaires,
yeah.
things like surveys those sit under qualitative data,
yeah.
personality assessments.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we call those types of data unstructured data because they don't take the normal formats.
Yeah.
Like a one is a one. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, that's lovely. Yeah. And both qualitative and quantitative would still need to meet the four V's, right, when you then put it under that scrutiny.
Exactly.
Yeah. Makes sense.
So, I can give an example of qualitative data. So, for example, you have a business like a restaurant you're running.
Yeah.
And you do online deliveries. Mm. And once in a while, you run surveys.
Mm.
You run surveys for customer satisfaction.
Mm.
So they go to the app, they give a score in terms of their satisfaction, which is in the form of a star ranking.
Mm.
Yeah, so that's qualitative data. Yes. So the information will be coming in through the app.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that information is coming in very fast because it's depending on the volume of transactions you're having and the recommendations. So you're able to design a score based on the customer satisfaction.
Mm.
One of the KPIs we use to measure that is like Net Promoter Score.
Okay.
Yeah. So just in by way of example, that's one way.
Mm.
Yeah, just a business can be able to tap in.
Fantastic. I understand you quite very well. I just want to then just before we look at the different applications of, I suppose, data across different industries, I want to then go back to something that you mentioned around the storing, the creation and storing of data, right? And in this instance, we're talking about big data, not just small data. There's obviously regulations on how it's created and stored. I think the world is moving towards that data being money, basically. And so there's laws, regulations around the creation and the storage.
Yeah. Yes, yes. So I think these laws are becoming more and more mature because as when at the center of data is behavior. So this behavior is around how we as humans or business stakeholders interact with that data.
Yeah.
Looking at example, social media data.
Mm.
So we find businesses utilizing a lot of the social media platforms to run their campaigns, which, for example, like advertising campaigns.
Mm.
So there are laws which have to be created to ensure the integrity of that information. And secondly, to be able to ensure that there's a level playing field where one is not taking advantage. But then most importantly is around the issue of ethics.
Yeah, yeah.
To ensure only the right type of data is being utilized.
Yeah.
This ensures that you're putting the data owner at the center of, which is the privacy at the center of it.
Yes. Yeah. Lovely. That makes sense. Now, when we started, we talked about zettabytes. Now, how big is this data that's now a disease? We spoke about zettabytes. So I'm asking how big zettabytes is this data that's now, we are at the Z's now of the data and how big the data is. How massive is this zettabytes?
Yeah, so I mean, if you look at the, from gig, so you have a kilobyte, then you go to a megabyte, then you go to a gigabyte, then from gigabytes is like a zettabyte, which is like a billion of bytes.
Yo.
So at the center of it is a byte.
Yo.
Yeah, so if you remember previously we used to have diskettes.
Yes.
I don't know if you remember. A lot of storage.
Yeah.
So you could have a floppy drive that could store maybe just
about
1 KB.
Yeah.
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 And then we had CDs that would stay maybe like 2 gigabytes.
Yeah.
And then we started having what are they called? Flash disks that could store terabytes, TBs. Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. So then from TBs now we have servers that can store now gigabytes.
Yeah.
So then for gigabytes now we have zettabytes. So it's just the nature of that data.
Yeah.
For example, if you have a camera and it has a card in it, it can store some certain maximum amount of data.
Yeah.
But you can imagine if you're running a business, or if you're a bank, for example, and you've got all sorts of information in running in it, you've got a CCTV footage that you have to store for analysis. So this data goes into volumes. You're talking about looking at social media data.
Yeah.
So it's a huge amount of information that has to be stored.
Yeah. And I suppose then data centers become quite very important in the storage of that data, but also the accuracy of that data for business and decision-making point of view. On a very side note, what's the footprint of this data? I'm pretty sure there's some environmental impact of storing so much zettabytes of data.
Yeah, so there is concern around the energy consumption. So this is an issue that's in worrying for the environmentalists. And then there's the data is stored in servers. So these servers require lots and lots of energy, which is energy, which is electricity to run and cool. Because they're just like massive computers that heat up. Yeah, the processors heat up. So you require a lot of cooling to cool them down. So that means that the consumption of these servers equals a huge significant component of the energy kilowatts, the consumption. So there is already measures in place to ensure that we have more and more green energy to that to utilize this. We've got leading countries such as the US, China, Russia, who already have servers that use solar energy to run the cooling systems. We've got a lot of like the tech companies such as Facebook, Google. They've set up their data centers in Iceland and those Nordic countries that are cooler to be able to manage the aspect of cooling now. So the concern now comes in terms of the energy consumption and also the balance. Balance between good and bad.
It's amazing because I'm reflecting just on, as a radio station ourselves, in terms of the data and the energy that we consume to run this radio station. But not only that, the other day I think I saw how much speed that we actually need for us to run this radio station. I saw one of the speed tests that we did. I was blown away to say, my goodness, the speed at which we need for us to transmit a conversation like this just on air is a lot of speed, which I think my home Wi-Fi doesn't even come close. But I suppose because of the nature of the work that we do here as a radio station, and I suppose other radio stations as well, it consumes big data and big energy for that matter. And we need to store it somewhere for the purpose of making sure that, you know, somewhere, somehow our leaders, our managers can go back to the data and look at how we are performing as a radio station. But it just speaks to exactly what you're saying. You need, I suppose, lots and lots of energy to run these data centers here.
Yes, definitely. Yeah, you need a lot of that. It's just this, it's just the matter of being able to translate that into business value, because who's paying for that? That you find, for example, we may be utilizing these social media platforms thinking they're free, but someone is paying the costs. So every post that you put there, that has to be streamed to a server. Then for the people going to do the likes, the viral sharing. So those platforms, TikTok, where the videos are shared, all those, they're free to the user, but the cost is being paid. So that brings in a different conversation, is how do you meet the business model that you use to monetize. So you find platforms such as pay-per-view, Netflix. Yeah, they charge subscription fees. You can see YouTube nowadays is also charging some premium amount when you have a premium account. So all those are now areas that are being used to bring in the revenues.
Yeah.
And the leading one is actually advertising.
Yeah.
So Facebook makes the money from advertising.
From advertising. Yeah. That's amazing.
That's the budget, yes.
Okay. All right, let's then bring it down a little bit. So what are the applications practically of this big data across finance, healthcare, marketing? Is it the same across? And I think we've already touched on the finance and the banking world. But is it the same across other industries as well?
Okay. So they do vary. So we'll start with the finance.
Yeah.
So under finance, we utilize big data to be able to develop better customer experience.
Mm.
So one of the key functions of a financial institution is perhaps to give out loans.
Mm.
So how do you ensure that you're giving out the right loan to a customer who's going to repay?
Yeah,
so we're able to analyze that and then develop a credit score that can give you that. So big data, they use now algorithms. So because data cannot just work by itself. So the algorithms are mathematical equations that are deployed on top of the data to be able to drill out the insights. So if you observe information that has got a certain set of parameters, when you utilize acceptable algorithms, you're able to get the insight. So when, for example, now in banking, in process of doing credit scoring, we use what we call linear regression, which is a mathematical model.
Yeah.
But we expose that mathematical model to various types of data. So this data, in terms of big data, will include not just your transactional history of your financial records, but newer data like location, where you stay, the social media activity, and also the other aspects of non-collateral. Is for example, a bank can just give you a loan without you having any transaction history.
Yeah.
So age, population, so all that data is combined to give great spectrum.
Okay. And I suppose in the healthcare sector, it helps them with analysis of diseases, trends, what are some of the things that are emerging so that they can stay ahead of the curve, I suppose. That's why big data, maybe in their space, would be very important, right?
Yes, yes. Actually, the most advances now in healthcare, that's where a lot of the big data applications are utilized, doing image analysis of cancer cells. Being able to analyze pharmacological trends in testing of different medicines.
Yeah.
It really helps to reduce research and innovation, because now when you're running the experiments in a lab, what used to take years now takes just days. Another popular use, for example, is what you call graph network analysis, just using information on social media about social networks, how people interact. And you remember during COVID, this was one of the tools which was used to analyze and predict and come up with measures that were preventing further spread of the infections.
Yeah.
So medicine has really benefited a lot from the advent of these tools.
Yeah.
And even now, going a bit deeper, is looking at the DNA. DNA structuring.
It's becoming important. Now I'm just having an epiphany here, a moment as I listen to you, and then my question is, when did the world suddenly wake up to the importance of data? Because like you're saying, some of the things that we used to only be able to analyze for 5 days, we do it in 5 seconds. Things that took, for example, 20 days for us to get some sort of response about it, now we can do it in literally seconds. When did the world wake up to the importance of data and then the development of tools that can then help us in quicker decision making? When did we wake up to all these things? I mean, I remember alone, you needed to wait for like a week before you can be told whether you've been approved for a loan. These days, you don't even go to the branch. You do it online on an app, and you know there and there whether you're approved or not. And the funds are transferred into your account without even you talking to a teller.
Yeah. So I think it's a good question you've asked. And if you look at how the world has been evolving, we have had what you call the first industrial revolution, second industrial revolution, third industrial revolution.
Yeah.
And all these evolutions have been characterized by change.
Yes.
In how we interact.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, for example, now we are in what we call the fourth industrial revolution.
Yes.
So under each of these ecosystems, we are talking about key improvements in infrastructure. For example, in the first industrial revolution, it was mostly around mechanization.
Yes.
And agriculture. So we saw the humanity at that time striving to improve productivity of labor to meet the demand of food.
Yeah.
Second industrial revolution was around electricity. So a lot of the advances in motorized electricity started coming into effect.
Yes.
Things like television, radio were launched during that period.
Yeah.
And then we moved into the third industrial revolution that started in the 60s, which was around computerization.
Mm.
So we saw a lot of computerization and digitization going on. We had companies being born, a lot of companies that we see now, Facebook, Google, Oracle, being born, they were birthed at that period.
Mm.
And what was key characteristic at that time is as we digitized, we tended to notice that there's more and more data that's being generated.
Oh.
So the more and more data that's being generated, now in the fourth industrial revolution, we call that the smart age, where... what do we do with that information that has been generated from those digital ecosystems? So that's the period now we started talking about servers, algorithms, storage, cloud computing.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
So one of the things that has changed is availability of storage.
Yeah.
And then servers have been able to grow.
Yeah.
And then secondly, it's the availability of processing power.
Yeah.
So this processing power is, for example, Intel. I know you know the chips that we use in processing information. So those chips that are used in processing information are critical.
Yeah.
In the application of the algorithms to data.
Yes, yes. Yeah. I mean, just listening to you, I'm mind blown by the fact that if we have achieved so much and at this level of scale, it looks like the next level of revolution is just going to really test humanity's, I suppose, parameters and how far we can stretch ourselves.
Yeah. So we just we just come again on the parameters.
So I was saying that if we have been able to achieve so much as a people, I mean, it's mind-boggling exactly what you're saying and what we've been able to do in the first, second, third, even the fourth industrial revolution. I would then argue that I get the fact that each revolution had its major, major alteration of human beings and business and how people viewed life. But I think the fourth one has just taken the world and people to a level that I think is just mind-boggling on its own. And so I'm saying the fifth, the sixth, the seventh, we are testing humanity's parameters here.
Yeah. So you can already see, and because it's called revolution for a reason, because a revolution is something that's forced and unavoidable.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So when you look at that, you're able to bring that perspective that, you know, it's inevitable.
Yeah.
And, we have humanity has to invest a lot in creating that adaptability. To the emerging ecosystem. So this comes in various fronts. For example, academia. You got the universities have to teach the right knowledge, and then also you have to look at the different business applications. So businesses such as, like, let me just remind you, like Nokia. Kodak.
Things of the Nokia, past.
Kodak.
Those ones.
Yeah, you know what happened to them because they were not able to evolve.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it doesn't guarantee you that if you're successful today, you'll be in that position throughout.
That's amazing. That's amazing. Okay, then let's talk about big data analytics and project success. I think we've already laid the foundation that big data plays an important role in decision-making processes in different businesses and all that. So, for the success of any type of business in any type of industry, what is the relationship of that with big data analytics?
Yeah, so I think what big data helps in is doing there's a complete shift in philosophy. Yeah, so in terms of the view and the approach. So for example, you're looking at how do you apply the information to make better decisions. So previously we were using information to audit performance, and that was what we call, you will detect there's a problem that happened by analyzing piece of information, and then you repair the damages. But now there's a complete shift in that philosophy. So we're now talking about being able to predict and prevent. Yeah. So you're able to predict that in the next year this will happen. But as a valuable business insight, what measures do you put in place to ensure that that does not happen?
Yeah.
So that shift in terms of a view is what now really is the key focus for most decision makers. So we avoid doing what you call a hindsight view to having a foresight view.
That, I think that's disastrous.
So initially it was a reserve for a few. We would hire management consultants or these strategy consultants to come and develop strategy for us. But now we're trying because of advance of these technologies, so that information is democratized. Anyone can be able to analyze and be able to see.
Now tell me, as someone who works across the African continent and maybe into the world as well, right? So clearly this is important for any business, big or small, for them to be able to take data, analyze it, create it, store it, make decisions based on it. But there's then also the other problem that is related to that, which is the availability of infrastructure across the African continent, except for a few countries like South Africa, Kenya, maybe a little bit of if you go up there, you know, your Malawis and all that. And the rest of Africa, or a bigger chunk of Africa, doesn't have the infrastructure, not only to store and hold this type of data, but just for everyday decision making. How far is Africa?
Yeah, so we were trying to catch up. It was something that was like a blessing in disguise that we were not well advanced prior to the third industrial revolution. So we've seen a jump from second to fourth.
Yeah.
What I'm saying that is because we had areas in Africa which had not gotten electricity.
Yeah.
Yeah, as late as like 10 years ago. But now we have connectivity that's coming. So you can look at the recent innovation, for example, for SpaceX. The satellite they have for accessing internet. So that was not there last year. But right now we are seeing at a fraction of our cost, we've got many local villages can be able to connect them to the internet. So that's a plus. That's a plus because now it means more information can be able to be processed more data. So what you're now trying to fill, and especially as an organization, is to provide knowledge. So we need to train the organizations on how to analyze that data.
Do you think it's important for individual businesses to then invest in data analytics, even if it's just incrementally? You start small, then you grow it, and because of maybe they might not have the money, the resources, the infrastructure, but just to invest in this data analytics processes, applications, maybe even engage businesses like yourself, but just do it incrementally, because clearly this is the way it's becoming business as usual to look at data and make decisions based on data insights. But I don't have the money to have a server. I don't have the money to have a big data center or whatever, but I can start somewhere.
Yes. Yeah, that's actually, it's something that's become inevitable for businesses that will not be able to evolve. We are saying that now they'll be automated or they'll not stand a chance. So if you look at that description, then it means your the only survival that you have is setting your business against a backdrop of the third and the fourth industrial revolution. So, for instance, if you're a company that does manufacturing, you have no chance of surviving unless you have an e-commerce platform. Yeah, how will you sell your products?
Yes, yeah.
So that's what you're talking about here. Yeah. So it's something that's really not a choice.
Yeah.
But it's, and you can also look at how fast companies are evolving.
Yes.
The most newest companies are the ones which are most successful.
Yeah.
Why? Because they no longer have to worry.
Yeah.
About the different investments they've done in systems that are already obsolete. So we are now talking about companies that are going to be profitable because they're starting now. And that is something that they can be able to they can be able to leverage on when they're doing a new business plan.
No, that's true. Okay, let's round it up then, because I do think we touched on one or two ethical issues there for consideration in this big data and its implications for decision making. But what are some of the challenges and maybe ethical challenges as well that you are seeing, experiencing, and how can businesses then work towards circumventing those challenges and ethical concerns?
Yeah, so one of the biggest issues is around rights. So we're trying to champion the aspect of access to information. But of course, that information that you're accessing, do you have the consent of the user? So that's something that we're trying to bucket. It's one of the ethical guidelines that we're trying to champion at this age and time. And then the second thing is around the ethical use of that information. So unless we avoid using, I remember, if you remember the issue in the US election when they said Facebook was exploited by political aspirants who were able to change the minds of others there. So that's also is an area that is of critical concern.
And what can businesses then do to avoid some of those concerns?
So what you're trying, what's happening now is most governments have come up with the frameworks to guide in the to guide in the in the, what's it called, in the usage of those of those tools. So the regulations which have been set. So businesses just have to plan with those regulations. So the repercussions if you comply. The repercussions if you don't comply. And some of those repercussions now are, you look at areas such as paying a fine if you don't comply. Or being to prison. So each country has the laws that they've written have been approved as a guideline. If custom data, for example, any instrument has got a considerable repercussion.
So it's important that businesses stay ahead of regulations and frameworks and what's happening in their countries and the world over, so they then, you know, I suppose, not only run away, but make sure that they are protected against these things. Unless, you know, they do that, they might even get sued for big data that they are handling and not handling it in the most correct way as well. That's a big one there.
Exactly. Because some will utilize it for competitive advantage. So that's why this, it's creating a level playing field.
That's very true. That's very true. Okay. Maelda, thank you so much. Really appreciate your time and your insights as well. God bless you and have a beautiful as you travel and the rest of the year as well.
And as always, insightful speaking to you. Thanks for the insights.
Indeed.
Let's keep talking.
Definitely. Let's do that. Have a good one.
All right. Bye.
Thank you so much. That was Timothy there talking to us this evening about, big data, what it is, what is the impact of it in businesses, what are some of the ethical concerns that one has to look at, and how that is important for decision-making in different industries.
Adventist World Radio, SID Media. We are not general practitioners. We are specialists in Bible-based content.